Okay, we have some sheets that we'd like for all of you to have. If you would pass those out, this will be kind of our guide for our study today. And we'll help you to see as we're progressing along. And also, I hope will be something on which you will make a note or two as we go. I appreciate very much your being here. I know Saturdays are hard to give up for other things. We usually have things we need to do around the house and things we want to do on Saturdays, and I appreciate you coming and being here with us for this study today. And I appreciate this congregation for allowing us to do this. This type of seminar is something that Oklahoma Christian College does in various places as we go around the country. We have done these in Kansas and Texas and Oklahoma, and this is the first one we've done in California, however. So we're glad that to have this opportunity. We do this as a service to churches and a way of helping them to have some things to think about. So hope that each of you will take one of these sheets and sort of follow along as we go. You know, as I observe churches around the country, I believe there is one thing that I would say is the weak spot in most churches, something that we do less well than we do most anything else. We usually have a fairly strong missions program. We want to send out missionaries, help missionaries into other parts of the world. We work hard at our education programs and trying to teach our children. And we have youth programs, and we have people who work on the building to keep it in good shape and all those things. But the point where I think most churches could do better is in our local outreach, in reaching out to the community and bringing people to Christ. And that really, that ought to be the thing we do the best, isn't it? After all, Jesus said, go into all nations and make disciples, baptize them, and then keep on teaching them what he commanded. And so we need to be about the business of reaching out and finding people who will hear the gospel and bringing them to Christ. That's a primary mission of the church. But somehow I think have not given that proper emphasis. We haven't given it a very careful strategy in a lot of our churches. We haven't utilized the potential that we have in our congregation to do that. And so what we're going to talk about today is what would a church look like that was really doing this well? What pieces would need to be put in place in order for a church to have a really strong, vibrant, effective outreach program? Now, there are two threads that are going to run through what we're talking about today. The first one is that this is something about which we need to be very intentional. We need to plan and design and strategize. We need to have those in our congregation who are really giving this their full attention and leading the rest of us in being more evangelistic. The second thread that's going to run through all of this is that there's a place for everybody in the evangelistic program of the church. It's not something that just three or four ought to do. It's something that everybody ought to be involved with, something that everybody can have a place in. Someone says, well, I don't get around much. Well, okay, there's something you can do from home. You can write cards, you can telephone, you can do, there are things you can do. And so we want to talk about how churches need to build a program, and we want to talk about how every member of the church needs to have a place in the evangelistic program of your congregation. So kind of keep those two things in mind as we go along. Now we're going to start on the outer circle of your chart, public information. A church needs to have a strong program of making itself known in the local community. In Acts 2:47, it says that the church was held in high regard by all the people, had favor with all the people. Acts chapter 2, verse 47. The Jerusalem church was well thought of by the local community. And so a church today ought to seek to be well thought of by its local community. It needs to be known. People need to know you're here. They need to have a good impression of you. I guess to put in business terms, you need to do good public relations, okay? You need to make yourself known in good ways so that people can know about you and think well of you. Now let me mention some of the ways that you can go about doing that. That would mean, for example, that you keep your building well and that your building is a credit to the community, and people notice as you go by, that as they go by, that this is a church that takes care of its facilities. A church that doesn't look very attractive or appealing is certainly not going to make a good name in the community. There needs to be, the building needs to be well kept inside so that when people come in, they say, well, these people really take care of things. The bulletin boards need to be up to date. The nursery and facilities for children need to be outstanding. One of the first things people do when they come, if they have children, is to see how well you take care of children in the nursery. If that's not well done, they won't be back. And so you need to be sure that's well taken care of. So things around the building need to be well kept and well done. There needs to be a very carefully designed program of greeting and taking care of those who visit your services. Those who study evangelism emphasize this one very, very strongly, that you have somebody at the door to greet the visitors. And you have some kind of a packet that you give to visitors that has something about your church. Some churches make a CD or something that they can give and that has a greeting from the preacher and has information about the church and some things that they give people to take home with them. But a little packet for the visitors. This greeting needs to be very warm, and members of the church need to be taught how to be warm and cordial with all who visit. Sometimes people go to a class, for example. A visitor goes to a Bible class and is not recognized and sits there by himself or herself, and after class is over, nobody says anything. Well, that won't work, will it? They've got to be well. Each class needs to be trained to take care of those who visit that class so that there's a good impression made. We need to be sure and capture the information from visitors. This is one of our best opportunities. So where are they from, and their name and address, and so you can follow up. One of the things we've started doing recently at the church where I attend that I think is pretty clever, we didn't think it up, we borrowed it from somebody else, but we have a little coffee mug that has the name of the church on it, and when somebody visits, we get their information, and within a day, somebody has gone to their house with a coffee mug, and it has kind of stuffed in the top of it, some papers that tell about the church. Why the coffee mug? Nobody will throw away a coffee mug. They're going to keep it. And if you go there and nobody's home, you can leave it on the front porch because the dogs won't eat it up, okay? So you go, and if nobody's home, well, you leave it anyway. And if they're there, well, you give it to them and talk to them. And so somebody goes to see them and takes them a coffee mug, and they'll keep that. You know, it's so hard to throw away a coffee mug. And so there they are, and every time they see it, they think about, yeah, I remember when I went to church there. I believe I'll go back. So you find ways to do that so that you can follow up with your visitors quickly. Some people take pies and cakes and bread, and okay, that's fine. But have a way to follow up with those who visit in a very, very effective way. I was here in California, down at Yucaipa, about 10 years ago or 15, I don't remember. At my age, it all runs together. I met a man who said, I said, well, what do you do at church? He says, I work the lobby. I work the lobby. I said, tell me about it. He said, okay. I get there early, and it's a church of about 250, I guess. And I watch people as they come in. If anybody comes in, I don't know. I make it a point to greet them and meet them and get to know them and know their names and write down some information, show them to a class, whatever. I try to see them again before they leave. He says, my goal is to get them to come back one more time. They've been once. I want to get them to come back one more time. And his strategy was, he says, after the first visit, I don't go see them yet. Some people do, and that's fine. But he says, I don't go see them. I call them on the phone and send them a letter and urge them to come back. When they come back a second time, I'm there. I see them. I greet them. And this time, I ask them if they'll go out to lunch with me after church. And when we go out for lunch, I don't bring up the church unless they do. I just talk about their family. Tell me about yourself. I get acquainted. Just get to know them, you know. Try to be friends with them. And then, after that, I call them on Monday or Tuesday and say, can I come see you? Well, what are they going to say? By now, we're old friends. Sure, come on by. I go by, and I talk to them and visit with them and see if they will have a Bible class with me. And when I talked to him, it was in the month of October. And he said, since January the 1st, I've baptized 20 people working the lobby. Well, that's pretty good. See, we're still in the public information circle, but we talked about the teaching. We'll get to that later. But here's somebody who is trying to be sure that a good impression is made. Signage needs to be good. Signs that tell people where you are, a sign in front of the building. I drove by a church building a while back. They had a nice building. They had a brick wall on which they had the letters of their church, the sign, you know, the name of their church. One of the letters was missing. What did I think of that church? Well, they don't do things very well. I mean, why would you not have all the letters of your name out on the sign? So they didn't give me a very good impression. A church needs to have a plan for getting themselves out in the public by newspaper. Getting your name in the local newspaper, that's an important thing to do. Maybe you have somebody in your church who's interested in journalism, and they can be your stringer to the local paper. They get acquainted with them. And you have something special. You have a vacation Bible school. You have something else, and a special speaker. You have somebody in your church that's done something that's really interesting. And this person can write the story and get it to the local paper, getting your name in front of people that way. You may want to do some advertising of various kinds to let people know who you are and where you are and what you're doing. You can do community service to get well known and to make a good impression. I know a congregation that has what they call a day in the city. about twice a year. And they find local projects that need to be done, a school that needs some work on its playground, a park that needs a little attention, some person who needs some help in their yard, a widow or somebody who is unable to take care of their own place. Maybe they pick up trash along the highway or whatever it is, but they find community projects to do. And by that, they make a good impression on people. They gain goodwill. There's a church that's is in a town where the town has a 4th of July festival. That's a big thing in the town. And so, for the 4th of July festival, they need people to help with that festival. And so, members of the church volunteer, and they have a regular thing they do. They take care of the watermelon table. The city provides the watermelons. So they go and they stand at the watermelon table and they wear name tags that have the name of the church on it. And they cut and serve the watermelon. Well, there they are. They're gaining goodwill, letting people know who they are, what's going on. And so they are building goodwill. And the church needs to think. The church needs to sit down and say, what can we do to make ourselves known in a positive way as we take care of things in our community, as we build goodwill? Now, I come back to the word intentional. So you've got to be intentional about this. It's not something you say, we're all nice people, everybody will know. No, they won't know. You've got to do things intentionally. Janet's here today, and she works with an agency that's foster children. Well, if you're helping take care of children who have a need, and people in the community know that you care for children and you want to help with that, that's a good way to build goodwill. And of course, having the child in your home when you bring them to church helps you to bring those children to Christ too. But here's a way to let people know that you are good people, you help people, you're servant-minded, and you're building goodwill and gaining goodwill with the people. It's very important that you find ways to do that. So this is the public information circle. And a church needs to be very intentional about saying, okay, what can we do? Maybe they say, we want to be sure that we have some people in various organizations in town. We want to have somebody in the Kiwanis Club, and we want to have somebody in the Lions Club, and somebody, we want to have people, we want to plant people in the PTA or whatever you call it out here. We want to be sure that we have some people who are in those organizations that can, and everybody will know who they are and what they are and where they come from, and they're going to act well, and that'll gain goodwill and let people know about us. I heard about a church the other day. It's in a fairly small town in Colorado that has joined the local chamber of commerce. And when you join the local chamber of commerce, you get to stand up in front of everybody in the chamber of commerce and tell a little bit about yourself. You're a new member, so you get to tell about yourself. And you get to hand out materials. And at the chamber of commerce, you get to put your pamphlets out with other people's pamphlets. And there's a story in the newspaper that you have just joined the chamber of commerce. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So we're talking about the circle of public information, making yourself known, making yourself well thought of, You know, if people think well of you as a church, that plows the ground a little bit, doesn't it, for planting the seed of the gospel. If they think you're isolated and you don't care and you're over there and nobody knows about you and their impression is not very good, it's going to be a lot harder for you to win people to Christ. But if you've gained their goodwill by very carefully planning your process of public information, then you've taken a step toward getting them ready to hear the gospel. Now, I want to ask you to think about what could you do in that circle. Is it something that you would like to do in that circle? If so, note it on your sheet. Say, you know, I'd like to be the one who puts stories in the newspaper. I like the one. I believe I could be a part of some hobby group or some group in town that would, where I could kind of let the church be, let people know about the church. What could you do in that circle of public information? Think about that. Okay, let's go to the next circle. The next circle is Christian living. Christian living. Well, we all know what Jesus said about that, don't we? Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And so we are to let our light shine through our Christian living. Now that blends with what I've just been saying. One of the ways that you want to let people feel good about you, about the church, is as you are in these various places, you let your light shine. You show people how to live the Christian life. You show them how good it is to live as a Christian. And so you are letting your light shine through Christian living. Now, one of the goals of a local congregation should be to prepare its members to let their light shine. The Bible classes, the sermons, the things that are done at church ought to be intentionally designed so that the members will let their light shine. You need to teach people who have jobs how to let their light shine on their jobs. That's part of the work of this church, is to say, okay, you work out in the public, you have a job, how can you on that job let your light shine? What can you do? You're a teacher in the public schools, how can you let your light shine? You're a high school student in the local high school, how can you let your light shine as a student in high school? How can you as a child in elementary school let your light shine? And this church, every church, needs to be teaching its people how to let their light shine. Now let me give you a few examples of people who've done that. There was once a fourth grader who invited a friend to come to church with him. The friend didn't come. But many, many years later, like 30 years later, this friend had a very serious illness, but survived. And he said, you know, I haven't been religious all these years, but I realize now that I won't live forever. I think it's time that I found a church. Guess which church he said he'll go to? The one his fourth grade friend invited him to attend. Because that fourth grader had lived a good life in front of him, had shown him Christian living and asked him to come, and 40 years later, that seed bears fruit. A young lady in high school, senior in high school, her dream is to have the lead in the school musical. She tries out and gets the part, and she is so excited. When she gets the script, she reads it, and it has words in it that she says, "Yeah, I'm a Christian. I can't say those words. I can't get up and say that in front of people. That wouldn't be my Christian living. I can't do that." So she goes to the director and says, "Would you let me substitute some other words for those, because I really can't say those words?" And the director says, "No, you have to say those words, and if you won't, you can't have the part." She says, "You'll have to get somebody else." Well, that's pretty strong stuff, you know. What an example of Christian living. There's a little bit more to that story. Her mother went to the school board. And the school board said to the director, "You let her have the part and don't make her say the words." Boy, that's strong Christian living right there. See, what a strong example. And we need to be teaching our children, our young people, how to do that. We need to be teaching people how to show their Christian light in all they do, so that wherever they are, whatever role they're in, people are saying, you know, there's somebody who is really lives the way a person ought to live. We need to teach our people in there how to live the life of Christ in their communities and their neighborhoods, where they can show when somebody in the neighborhood is sick, they're the first one there to help. When there's a death of somebody in that area, they're there to help. When there's somebody new moves in, they're the first ones there to say welcome to this neighborhood and to tell them about the church. At work, we are teaching people how to be effective Christians at work. How to use your coffee break in a Christian way. How to say things that will be attractive to people and let people see what kind of a person you are, how you live the Christian life. There are people at work where our members are working who need help, who need a friend, who need somebody to take an interest in them. Let's teach our members how to do that. And in the process, they will show their Christian light, and that Christian light will be effective in drawing them to Christ. One of the most interesting books that I've read in a while is a book called The Rise of Christianity by Rodney Stark. I really recommend it to you. Rodney Stark, The Rise of Christianity. Rodney Stark does not approach the rise of Christianity from a religious point of view. He is a sociologist. And he studies it from the standpoint of what kind of things happened with the church. And his first question was, how large did the church get to be? His study says that by 350 AD, the church had by 350 AD, the church had over 30 million members. How did the church get so big so fast? And his answer to that is basically twofold. The first was by the way they lived. They were so, when people got sick, they helped them. When people were in trouble, they were there to help. When plagues of illness swept through the Roman Empire, they nursed their own members back to health, and they nursed their neighbors back to health. They were helping kind of people. They were the kind of people who showed their Christian living and their interest in people and their desire to help. They showed this. And so the way they lived was a magnet to draw people to say, you know, Paul, the way that those people live is very good. It's interesting. I want to know more about it. And their Christian living was a magnet. And the other thing, not only the way they lived, but the way they died. Isn't that an interesting one? They were being persecuted. But the way they accepted persecution and the way they accepted death became a magnet for Christianity. Isn't that amazing? Here's a group of them going to be taken out into the arena to be eaten by wild animals. And they went out to face that singing hymns to Jesus. And people in the stands watching said, What kind of religion is it that lets you die like that? So the way they lived and the way they died caused the church to grow tremendously. I think that will still work, don't you? The way they lived and the way they died. That's Rodney Stark, The Rise of Christianity. Very interesting book. Not a long book, not written from a religious point of view, not even written to favor Christianity, just a study of what happened and how they got so big so fast, the way they lived and the way they died. That's the Christian living circle we're talking about. Now again, here's the two things I started with. You got to be intentional. You got to teach people how to do that. In every circumstance of life, how do you show Christianity? Whether you're in the fourth grade or high school or senior citizen, whatever that means. I went to something the other day and they had a senior price. I said, do you have a super senior price? They said, no, just a senior price. I said, okay. Whatever your age, you know, whatever your circumstance, wherever you live, whatever you're involved with, the church is teaching people how to use that circumstance to let your light shine. And that's for every one of us. That's not just for the preacher and the elders. That's for every one of us. How we live, how we let our light shine. Now that's circle number two. And that's for everybody. Everybody, every member of the church has a part in that. We need to be teaching every member how to be effective in letting his or her light shine. They're members of clubs, they're active here, they're at work here, they're in school here. How do you let your light shine in whatever it is you're doing? Okay, let's go to circle number three. Circle number three is conversational evangelism. Conversational evangelism. Well, in Colossians chapter 4, Paul says, verses 3 through 6, Paul says that he wants the church in Colossae to pray for him, that he may treat those on the outside in the right way, and that he may, that his conversation may be full of grace. Conversation. Conversational evangelism. You know, it's amazing to me as I study the scriptures, the number of occasions in the New Testament where somebody used conversational evangelism. I suppose the premier case would be Jesus and the woman at the well. So, John chapter 4, Jesus is sitting there by this well in Samaria. The Samaritan woman comes up, and Jesus says to her, would you give me a drink? In those days, a man didn't normally speak to a woman and ask her a question like that. In those days, a Jew didn't normally speak to a Samaritan at all. And she knows that. She says, "You're a Jew, and you ask me, a Samaritan, to give you a drink?" Now look what happens. And Jesus said, "Well, if you'd ask me, I'd give you water, and you'd never have to draw water again." What's he doing? He's switching from a regular conversation now into something spiritual, you see. He turns the conversation, and she says, "Well, what kind of water is that?" And he says, "Well, it's living water." And they begin to talk about it, and finally he says, "I perceive you're a prophet. And is Mount Gerizim or Jerusalem the place?" See how the conversation begins to go about spiritual things? Jesus just starts out, "Would you give me a drink?" And before long, they're talking about spiritual things. And the woman goes in and brings her friends out, and Jesus preaches to a whole group of people. Starts with, "Would you give me a drink?" Well, you can think about Paul. Paul was a master at this. Paul goes to Athens, and he's wandering around the mall. That's not the word in your Bible? Oh, it's marketplace, is that it? But it's got stores, and it's got places of entertainment, and it's got government offices. What would you call it? Would you call it the mall? Paul wanders around the mall, and he begins to talk to Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, and they start a conversation. And before long, they say, "Well, come on up here to the to Mars Hill, and let's talk some more about this." And Paul delivers this marvelous sermon recorded in Acts 17. Starts with a conversation in the mall. I guess my favorite example of Paul is when he's in Rome in chains. He's under house arrest, basically. He has his own house, but he can't leave. He's under guard. And I can just hear Paul's mind working. And it says, "You mean these soldiers to whom I'm chained can't get away?" And the Bible says the word of the Lord spread throughout the whole Praetorian Guard. How do you suppose that happened? Well, Paul just talks to them, you know. They're chained to him, and they can't get away. And he does conversational evangelism, okay? Well, there are lots of other cases in the Bible of conversational evangelism. Now, that's something we need to teach people to do. The church needs to teach people to do this. You need to have practice sessions on Wednesday night and teach people how to do conversational evangelism. Let me give you some examples of it today. There's a mechanic who goes across the street every day to the same cafe where he eats lunch. And he says to the waitresses, "You know, you ought to go to church with me sometime. I go out here to the Memorial Road Church of Christ." They don't say much. And he says something occasionally about the church when he's being served by these waitresses. You know, you can't have a very long conversation with a waitress. And they never come to church. But one day, one of these waitresses learns that she's got cancer. She wants to talk to somebody religious. Who does she know? A mechanic. And she says to him, "You know, I'm having a hard time right now. I've just learned I've got cancer. I really need to talk to somebody." He says, "I think our preacher would really be a good help to you right now." She said, "Okay." So he sets up a meeting with her and the preacher, and she brings three of her friends. And that starts a Bible study, and eventually these four women are baptized into Christ. It starts with a conversation with a waitress. I know of a woman who goes to the beauty parlor occasionally. I don't know much about beauty parlors. You can look at me and tell I don't know much about beauty parlors. But anyway, I understand they talk. Am I doing okay? Is that all right? They talk. She says, okay, as long as I'm going to talk, I might as well talk about the church. And so she talks to her beauty operator, doing her hair, tells her, you know, what's going on at church. Our young people are doing this. The preacher preached about that. I was reading my Bible the other day, and I read this. In our Bible class, we're doing this. We've been helping somebody who's had a problem. Just, you know, tell what's going on at church. And before long, after a while, she says to her beauty operator, you know, would you be interested in a Bible study? My husband and I like to do that. Well, yeah, I would. And so they have a Bible study, and this woman and her husband and two older children are baptized into Christ. Starts with a conversation in the beauty parlor. You know, it's not hard to share with people some things that are going on at church. Nobody's going to be offended by that. Nobody's going to be put off if you say to them, you know, we had something really interesting happen at church the other day. We were having vacation Bible school, and you know, okay. Or, you know, the preacher said something the other day that really struck me. Let me tell you what it was. That's not going to offend anybody. If our members really did conversational evangelism, before long people around here would say, you know, everywhere I go, I keep hearing about the Church of Christ. I'm gonna try it out. Because they hear about it all the time, just in conversation. I spoke on this one Wednesday night at my home congregation and said to people, okay, now I want you to do it this week and tell me what experience you had. And it got to be about Monday, and I said, you know, I haven't done it. I told them to do it, and I haven't done it. And I was going out to buy something for my wife for her birthday. And I said, okay, I'm going into this store, and I'm going to do conversational evangelism before I leave the store. Somehow, some way, I'm going to do it before I leave the store. So I go into the store, and of course, it's a women's shop, and I see these women wandering around, and I say, well, I'm just going to walk up to these women and say, where do you go to church? How am I going to do this? How's this going to work? And so I don't know exactly how. I don't want to do that, but I buy something and take it up to the clerk. And the clerk is wrapping it, and I've got now a captive audience right there. See, she is wrapping my present, and she's got to be nice to me because she is the clerk. And so I say to her, how long have you worked here? She said, about 10 years. I said, well, say that. That's quite a long time. I've worked where I work. I've been there 58 years. 58 years? What's she going to say next? Everybody say it aloud. Where do you work? See where I'm going? Well, I work out at Oklahoma Christian University. And right next to there is the Memorial Lord Church of Christ, and that's where I go to church. She says, well, I've been there once. And we talk about it, and I encourage her. And she knew some people who go to church there. And so we got a good conversation. I can't tell you that she was baptized the next day. I don't know where all that went. I just know I planted a seed, you know. You got to plant the seed. My wife, Joanne, is helping a woman buy a car. And the salesman says, would you like to drive it? Joanne says, yes. So she gets in the driver's seat. And the woman she's working with in the other front seat, and the salesman gets in the back. Where do you suppose she drove? Church building, okay? This is where I go to church. She says, why don't we go in a minute? What can he say? So they go inside and walk around a little bit and look around, what's inside? And then they get back in the car. I don't know whether they bought the, did you buy the car? I don't remember what you, but then they eventually bought the car. But anyway, there are opportunities abound for conversational evangelism. I mean, just everywhere we are. I went down to buy some luggage. And the guy says, you're going on a trip? That's, you know, that's pretty bright. And what am I going to say? No, I just thought it'd look nice around the living room. No. What am I going to say? Okay, I'm going to say, yes, I'm going on a trip. Or I can say, I'm going on a trip to Africa. Or I can say, I'm going on a trip to Africa to do mission work. Or I'm going on a trip to Africa to do mission work. I'm a member at the Memorial Road Church of Christ, and lots of us go around the places to spread the gospel. The luggage costs the same, but I can plant the seed, conversational evangelism. Doesn't cost a penny. You don't have to add one penny to your budget, and it can do wonders. It can do wonders if you will train your members to do conversational evangelism. Sensitize them to it. Help them do it. Let them come in and have sessions on Wednesday night in a class and say, okay, you're standing in the grocery store line. How are you going to do it? And have two people stand up there, and one of them is the member and one of them is a non-member. Let's practice doing this in the grocery store line, okay? You hear your neighbor and you invite your neighbor over for coffee. What are you going to do? And you practice. You set up situations and practice it. Make people really aware of how much good can be done through conversational evangelism. And it's for everybody. Christian living is for everybody. Conversational evangelism is for everybody. Everybody should be trained to do this. And it can do so much good. I remember when Oklahoma Christian moved from Bartlesville to Oklahoma City in 1958. We were just a small school of 200 at the time. We now have got over 2,000, but we were 200 at the time. And somebody had the bright idea of doing something that would let people in the community talk about us. And 1 month they paid all our salary in $2 bills. And suddenly the community is inundated with $2 bills. And the question is, where did all these $2 bills come from? Well, that's what they paid their people out at Oklahoma Christian with. And everybody in town is talking about us. See? Conversational evangelism. You can get everybody talking about you if you'll just train your members to do conversational evangelism. Intentional. And everybody does it. Intentional, and everybody does it. Okay. The next circle is ministry evangelism. Ministry. Ministry. Every church needs a small group of people who are involved in ministry evangelism. That is, you have a committee or a ministry or whatever you call it in your church of people, a small core of people who are specializing in this area. You've got an education committee, you've got a missions committee, you've got a building committee or whatever. You need an evangelism committee, a local evangelism committee. And these people are focused 24 hours a day on local outreach. This is their thing. The people who are really bitten by this bug. And they're going to see that this congregation really, really works hard in local evangelism. They are the They are the ones who just are going to live and breathe, making this congregation evangelistic. Now, what are they going to do? Well, first of all, they're going to see that everybody who visits is welcomed. They're going to see that the information is gathered that needs to be gathered. They're going to see that visits are made. They're going to take them the coffee mugs. They're going to see that those coffee mugs are taken. They're going to be sure that every visitor is treated well. They're going to have materials ready for the visitor when they come. Somebody at the door to be a greeter. They're going to see that everybody who is visited is treated well. They're going to see that there's proper follow-up to the visits. They're going to see that the people who visit get a follow-up visit, a follow-up phone call, a follow-up letter. They're going to work hard to see that all of that happens. This is the ministry now. The people who are focusing on this, they're going to have a team that does the follow-up with visitors. They're going to see that if you have a vacation Bible school or some other special event to which visitors come, they're going to see that that is well followed up, that people are contacted and visited and are put on a mailing list. They're going to see that all of that happens. They're going to see that that kind of follow-up is done. They're going to suggest occasional seminars on topics to which the community can be invited, a marriage seminar, a parenting seminar, a financial seminar, whatever it is that they think will draw people in. And they're going to see that those things happen as a way of identifying people that can be reached. So they're going to suggest occasional seminars of that sort and be ready to receive the visitors and to do the follow-up. That's going to be an outreach, and they're going to see that that happens, and they're going to see that the congregation is ready for that and makes it a success, and that they invite their friends and things like that. They're going to suggest Friends Day. Maybe two or three times a year, have a Friends Day, in which every member is encouraged to bring a friend to church. Here's the way some churches do that. They ask everybody in the congregation to turn in five names of people they know that they're going to try to invite to come. And the church gets their name and address and mails them some things, some information, and has brochures and cards that the members can use to hand to those people. And they really work hard at Friends Day. There's a church in Oklahoma that is a fairly small church, but they've been doing Friends Day for 20 years. It's become a big local event. And on that day, they have so many visitors, they have to have two services because their auditorium won't hold that many more people. They double their attendance on Friends Day. They've been working on it for a while. They bring in a speaker and they do all kinds of things, but they work that really hard, and it's become one of the well-known events in town, Friends Day. Another church that does that in Lawton, Oklahoma, has a special day about every quarter, four times a year, and they get their members to turn in the names, and they've sent them materials. They have the members talk to their friends and bring them. I was there for one of their guest speakers, and I think they had 40 visitors that day. Well, think of what kind of follow-up that gives you the opportunity for. I mean, here's a whole group of people now that you can begin to work with and try to reach for Christ through a Friends Day. So those are very, very important and effective, and this ministry is planning things like that, and trying to see that they are highly successful. Now, I want to tell you, you've got to mobilize the whole church, see. This ministry group, this committee, tries to mobilize the whole church. If they're the only ones interested in Friends Day, it's going to fail. They've got to get every member inviting somebody. You know, it'd be really interesting, I think, if we would prepare our congregation for this, but if we would get members to sign on to say, sometime in the next 12 months, I will bring a visitor with me to church. Is there anybody who attends this congregation or your congregation that could not find somebody to bring to church with them during a 12-month period? I don't believe there's anybody that couldn't do that. High school kids, our best evangelizers are our high school kids. They bring more friends to church than anybody. Children could bring a friend, and probably their parents would come with them. I mean, you could sell the slogan, each one bring one. Sometime in the next 12 months, each one bring one. Sell it. I would even hand out sheets and say, sign on the dotted line, that you will bring somebody with you to church or one of our special seminars or something during the next 12 months. There's nobody that couldn't do that. And look what would happen if you had that many people coming as visitors. And look at the opportunity that gives you. And this ministry committee now is, that's how they think every day. How can we mobilize this church? How can we mobilize the church? Here's something else that ministry does. They look around and they say, you know, we've got some people who attend here with a husband or with a wife or an older child that's never been baptized. Let's make a list of those who are already attending who've never been baptized into Christ. We had a man who'd been coming with his wife to church for 15, 20 years, I guess. They sat right down at the front. Every time we had a work day, he showed up. I mean, he acted just like a member, but he had never been baptized. Well, they had a small group meeting, and he went to the small group meeting with his wife, and they were introducing themselves, and he said, when they came to him, he said, well, my name is so-and-so. I'm not a member here, but I attend a lot. And the woman sitting next to him said, well, why aren't you a member? Oh, boy, we've ruined it now. He said, well, I just never have done that. Well, why don't you? And he was baptized the next week. Now, I'm not recommending that method, but what I'm saying is that so many times we're afraid to do something, the wrong thing, and so what do? Nothing. Nothing ain't going to cut it. And this ministry group is making a list of those people in your church that ought to be reached, and then is strategizing about what can we do to get them to make that decision. Nearly every church has got some. What are we going to do? This ministry group is saying, let's make a list of those who used to come here that don't come anymore and see which ones we could go out and reclaim. Haven't you got some of those? There was a small church in Texas that did that, and they made a list, and they got 50 on their list that still lived in their area that didn't come anymore. And they said, let's do something about it. And they planned a special day for those people. And they invited them to come. And they had people to call them and invite them. And 25 of the 50 came on that day. Now they got an opportunity to work with those people to reclaim them, you see. That's this ministry group is working on things like that. They're thinking about that all the time. What can we do to make this church more evangelistic? And they're mobilizing the people in every way you can think of. That's the ministry evangelism. Well, we need to take a break here. And so, how are we doing in there? Two more minutes, okay. Don't go yet. The Spanish group is still going, and so we need to, before we can go in there for refreshments, we need to let them finish. So let me continue for another couple of minutes, and then we'll take a break. So we're talking about this ministry evangelism. Now you need to find some people who really are committed to that, and they're gonna just live and breathe that. That is their thing. They meet every week or every 2 weeks, and they talk about it. What can we do? Here's something else they do. They work to make every other ministry of the church to be evangelistic. How can our education ministry be evangelistic? How can our benevolence ministry be evangelistic? How can our foster care ministry be evangelistic? How can we make our high school events evangelistic? They're thinking, how can we make every other ministry of the church to be evangelistic? Sometimes we do lots of benevolence and gains goodwill, but we don't ever give the benevolence a little of an evangelistic twist. We don't follow up with those people and find out if they might be possible converts, you know. We got to make that event, that benevolence work evangelistic. So this ministry is thinking, how can we make every ministry evangelistic? How can we be sure that our building does what it needs to do? How can we be sure that visitors are greeted? How can we be sure that everything we do is going to have a good evangelistic turn?